over, but history has just begun. Legend of the Galactic Heroes. 3500 BCE, Tri-Solaris System. The great round face was in the night sky, and it was easy to see every wrinkle on the face. The sky spheres hung lazily next to the great round face, but the yellow moon still hadn't emerged. Zuna, riding the agile winged beast Su'ulu'u, swept across the sparkling canopy of the forest and headed for the floating mountains in the distance. She flew over the towering peaks one after another until she was at the tallest summit. Even from some distance away, Zuna could see the splendid figure of Kasha at the top. He was gazing up at the sky, and next to him lay the gentle winged beast, Tu'utu'u. Zuna was overjoyed. Even before Su'ulu'u had touched the ground, she leapt off its back.
I see you.
I see you.
Kasha bowed to her. Zuna enjoyed watching Kasha bowing. Everything he did was so graceful, so poised. He was nothing like the rough hunters of her own tribe. Kasha's tribe used to live by the shore of the Southern Ocean and had migrated near her tribe's territory not long ago. Kasha was what his people called an observer, meaning that it was his job to observe the heavenly bodies. Zuna didn't know what good such observations did, but Kasha told her that the motion of the heavenly bodies caused the tides, and that was why his tribe, living by the coast, had such a tradition. Although they were now living in the forest, Kasha still insisted on coming to the mountaintop each night to watch the sky. Zuna was full of curiosity for this mysterious young man, and she often slipped out at night to join him on top of the floating mountains. Kasha smiled at her.
Look, the yellow moon is about to come out.
He pointed to a spot next to the great round face, where a faint orange glow appeared, followed quickly by the emerging crescent of the yellow moon. The warm yellow light suffused the sky and bathed the pair on the mountain. Zuna stole a glance at Kasha, who looked especially handsome in the yellow moonlight. But Kasha wasn't looking at her. He kept his eyes on the yellow moon. Rather annoyed, Zuna brushed him with her tail.
Why do you gaze at it every night? Is it really pretty?
Kasha said,
Can you tell what's next to the yellow moon?
Is it the fire god star?
Zuna asked. She saw that the fire god star and the yellow moon were approaching each other.
Are they going to collide?
Kasha laughed.
Of course not, silly.
Soon, Zuna saw that as the fire god star and the yellow moon came together, the fire god star became just a black spot over the face of the yellow moon, slowly sweeping over the glowing circle. After a moment, Zuna said tentatively,
The yellow moon must be farther away from us than the fire god star, right?
Much, much farther, said Kasha. The yellow moon is farther away than any of the wandering stars.
What's a wandering star?
Bodies that move through the heavens are called wandering stars. Those that don't move but only rotate with the heavenly sphere are called staying stars.
Is the yellow moon a wandering star or a staying star?
That's hard to say, Zuna. By the definition I just gave, it should be called a wandering star, since it clearly moves through the heavens. But it's so big. It's farther than the fire god star, the water god star, and even the war god star. But it still appears as a disk instead of a dot. And it's much too bright. Some wise people from my tribe speculate that it's also a sun that gives off light on its own, just like our sun, though it's much, much farther away than our sun, which is why it looks so much dimmer.
Does it also orbit around the Earth?
The yellow moon? No. According to the ancient observers of my tribe, the yellow moon orbits around the sun. Or, more precisely, it and the sun orbit around a spot between them. Like this.
He illustrated what he meant by holding out a finger on each hand and revolving them around some imaginary spot in the middle.
Ah, like two people who love each other,
said Zuna.
That's right. In our legends, the sun and the yellow moon are a pair of lovers.
Do you think they have children?
What?
The sun and the yellow moon. Do they have children?
What a silly thought.
But the grin was frozen on Kasha's face.
What's wrong?
Asked Zuna.
Nothing. I just remembered a really obscure myth, which said that the sun and the yellow moon really did have a child. The little red star.
I've never heard of it, said Zuna.
Kasha pointed to a corner of the sky, where a dim red star glowed. It was fainter than many of the other stars, and was almost lost in the glow of the yellow moon.
What's so special about that star that it could be considered the child of the sun and the yellow moon?
Asked Zuna.
It is indeed a very faint star. But the little red star is not like the other stars. It does move through the heavens on its own, though very, very slowly. Slower than any of the wandering stars. If you compare our ancient star charts with the heavens today, you'll see how much it has moved. We don't consider it a wandering star, but we don't think of it as a staying star either. It must be very far from us, even farther than the yellow moon, maybe almost all the way to the sphere of staying stars. But it's still connected to the sun and the yellow moon. In our legends, it had committed some terrible sin and was exiled by its parents. That's why it's wandering far from home. Every 100,000 years, it makes a great circle around the sun and the yellow moon, but it dares not return.
Poor kid,
said Zuna.
Why not let it come home?
If it ever did return, it would be a disaster, said a chuckling Kasha. It would destroy the love between the sun and the yellow moon.
What? I thought it was the child of the sun and the yellow moon.
I'm not too sure about the details. But in our legends, all the heavenly bodies love each other and want to be together. But if they really do cluster together, they won't be orbiting around the earth and illuminating everything on the ground. That's why the Maker separated them from each other, giving order and restraint to their love. Since the little red star is the child of both the sun and the yellow moon, if it ever did return, the sun and the yellow moon would fight over it, each demanding that the little red star revolve around itself. In that case, the sun and the yellow moon would no longer orbit around each other, twirling in their dance. Instead, they'd be fighting each other, and the little red star might even fall into one of them, bringing chaos to the heavenly order.
What a wise maker, exclaimed Zuna. The Maker's arrangement is both kind and clever. If the sun, the yellow moon, and the little red star were too close together, perhaps we wouldn't even exist.
Kasha looked thoughtful.
That's a really interesting thought. Maybe even if we came to be, with those three heavenly bodies so close together and so chaotically intertwined, we'd be living in a far crueler and stranger world. We wouldn't even know which body should be called our sun.
Both seemed lost in wild and fanciful thoughts when Su'ulu'u and Tu'utu'u screamed. Zuna and Kasha looked over to the two winged beasts, thinking they were fighting, but they saw that the beasts were crying in alarm in the direction of the yellow moon. However, when they looked toward the yellow moon, they saw nothing unusual. Since winged beasts did sometimes behave skittishly for no reason, the two didn't think it was anything to worry about. Zuna reprimanded the beasts with a few severe words, and the two beasts soon quieted down. Zuna held Kasha's hand.
Tell me how the sun fell in love with the yellow moon.
But Kasha now realized his companion was far more beautiful than the yellow moon. He stared into her eyes.
Why don't we tell a story about Zuna and Kasha together?
Zuna grinned shyly. The boy finally understood her. A few minutes later, The new couple took off on their winged beasts and chased each other through the sky above the mountains. Higher and higher they flew, as though they were going to touch the great round face, as though they were about to climb onto the yellow moon. But they didn't realize that the winged beasts had cried out in alarm for a good reason. A silver streak rose behind them, and disguised by the glow of the yellow moon, shot straight into the sky, flying higher even than the two of them, heading straight for a world even farther away than the great round face, the yellow moon, and the little red star. A world 4 light-years away. May 1453, Constantinople. Sky, earth, ocean, city, everything. Once again, the visible world exposed itself. In a gesture that seemed familiar to her, the world had cast off all clothing and opened itself, revealing every inch of skin to her greedy eyes. Of course, now she was the client, and the world was her whore. An infinity of rich, tempting details were revealed to her all at once, and she could do whatever she wanted to the world without anyone being able to stop her, seeking her pleasure. The sense of power was intoxicating. Helena shook her head and pushed the sinful comparison away. She could no longer recall how many times she had returned to this marvelous space, yet each visit made her tremble with excitement. She was certain that God had blessed her with this opportunity. Like Daniel, Isaiah, or John, the author of the book of Revelation, she had been granted divine visions. In some sense, Helena was sure that she had been elevated somehow to a plane higher than the earthly world, which was how she was able to see the world all at once. But it wasn't height in the sense of a tower or a mountain, but even higher, above the sublunary world. That had to mean the gates of heaven, right? She couldn't help but look for the wonders described in the book of Revelation. The jasper walls, the pearly gates, the pure gold streets. But she had never found them. She had to conclude that the kingdom of heaven was still not fully open to her. She had to complete her God-given mission on earth before she would be allowed in. The mission was simple. Assassinate the heathen king, Satan's minion, the Ottoman Sultan Mehmed II, also known as El Fatih, the Conqueror. As soon as she completed her mission, she would be hailed as the savior of Byzantium and all Christendom. She would be a greater saint, even than Jeanne d'Arc. Feeling courage coursing through her veins, she picked up the scimitar and walked from the minaret. She had gotten the hang of walking through this strange space. Following an edge that couldn't be seen in the ordinary world, she walked inside the city wall and then descended into the ground. She really was underground, and the soil above her was thicker than a man's height. Yet, because she was still in the higher plane, she could walk through solid ground without any trouble. Although the invisible force that made everything fall was still in effect, she was now pressed against the ground from another direction. Though she was deep within the earth, she was still able to see everything around her and freely move in any direction. The conqueror's camp was in sight. Helena was a bit nervous. Though she knew she was completely safe from detection from ordinary space, her heart nonetheless pounded.
God, will you really help me complete this incredible mission? Give me a sign.
Unexpectedly, a powerful spiritual force buffeted her mind. She seemed to hear a voice.
Ask, and it shall be given you. Seek, and ye shall find. Knock, and it shall be opened unto you.
Helena was so astonished that she blurted out,
Is that you, God?
But the voice spoke no more. Helena forced herself to be calm. She must have been so nervous that the words from the Gospels came into her mind unbidden. She held her breath and slowly approached the Sultan's magnificent tent. It wasn't very difficult. Though the tent was heavily guarded, none of the security measures mattered to her. From her space, she approached along an underground plane that could not be seen from the surface and entered the tent right under the eyes of the guards. The young Sultan lay between the nude figures of four concubines, deep in sleep. She recognized him right away, based on Francis's drawing.
"Sinful heathen. Sinful,"
she raged in her mind. She lifted the scimitar. One strike, and the Sultan would be dead. But that strange voice in her head spoke again.
"Enter ye in at the strait gate, for wide is the gate, and broad is the way, that leadeth to destruction."
A faint outline of a door appeared in front of her. A silver light spilled out of it, twinkling, as though calling her to enter. She was so startled that she lost her grip on the scimitar, and the weapon fell. Though she was in another space, the scimitar still followed the laws of gravity and landed inside an underground rock. The faint noise of metal against stone caused the Sultan to rub his eyes, as though about to wake from his slumber. Helena didn't know what to do. She stared at the glowing rectangular outline.
"This must be the gates of heaven, guarded by Saint Peter."
She had no idea that in the last universe, she had decided to step through the door and thus entered a mini-universe that gave her a new mission. But in this universe, because her brain differed from the version in the last universe by a few atoms, everything was going to be different.
"I must kill the heathen before entering heaven."
Losing the scimitar was not a big setback. She reached out for the quivering mass that was the Sultan's brain. Like all his other organs, the brain lay completely exposed to her. All she had to do was to give that gooey mass a hard squeeze, and the Sultan would be dead. Suddenly, the Sultan turned in his sleep. Helena's hand missed and touched the Sultan's nude skin. The Sultan, half awake, grabbed her hand and pulled her to him. Helena was too weak to resist, and she fell out of her space and landed in his embrace. The marvelous world disappeared, and the world of walls and surfaces pressed against her awareness, almost suffocating her. Even worse, the Sultan was holding her so tightly that she could not breathe. As the Sultan moved his hands over her slender, feminine body, Helena panicked.
"I've got to go back."
Helena struggled against the Sultan. If she could just reach the surface that she had tumbled from, she could climb back. Her eyes brightened as her head reached into that marvelous space, and the openness of the world took her breath away. That glowing rectangular outline was still there, calling to her. Before she could pull herself up, that beastly Sultan pulled her back into his world and slapped her hard across the face. The Sultan was now fully awake. Though in the dark interior of the tent, he couldn't tell who she was. He cursed at her. Helena headbutted him and climbed up as his arms loosened, dashing for the surface that she had fallen from. Nothing. The surface was gone. Helena was stunned, and before she could react, the Sultan, his sexual desire stoked, had pulled her back again and forced himself on top of her.
"It's over. I can't save anyone, not even myself."
The high-dimensional fragment was moving away from Earth, carrying with it the door to the mini-universe and Helena's hope, never to return. 1964. Zhongnanhai Compound, Beijing, China. A tall old man bent over the wide expanse of his desk, reading glasses held in one hand, deeply absorbed by the document in front of him. From time to time as he read, he nodded and smiled. The document's title was Research Report on the Possibility of Technology Leap Due to the Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. The old man finished the report and picked up a pen. With a few powerful strokes, he wrote his comment. Others have already sent their messages out into space. It's dangerous if extraterrestrials only hear their voices. We should speak up as well. Only then will they get a complete picture of human society. It's not possible to get the truth by only listening to one side. We must make this happen. He was about to add, and quickly, to emphasize the urgency of the task, but a knock on the door broke his concentration. He looked up and smiled.
Enlai, good timing. Come in and read this interesting report.
A thin old man whose face betrayed signs of exhaustion walked in, though his stride was still steady and full of energy. He picked up the report and glanced through it quickly. Smiling, he said,
How times have changed. When I was studying in France, I thought Verne's science fiction novels utterly fantastic. And now the Americans are devoting serious resources to the search for aliens. Our country must also think about these big-picture issues. We can't always follow the others and react. I think we should also build our own facility to search for extraterrestrials. I've even got a name for our facility. Red Coast. Maybe the significance of this move won't be apparent for many years, but it's very important. I'm thinking of summoning Guo Moruo and Qian Shui-sen for a discussion in a few days to plan out the details for this project. What do you think?
It's a good idea, Chairman, except the budget.
Zhou Enlai's expression was awkward. The tall old man's tone was dismissive.
I know very well that we are not a rich country. We can't do it at the scale of the Americans. How about we allocate 100 million yuan initially?
Zhou Enlai smiled helplessly and handed a document to him.
Why don't you take a look at this budget report first?
The tall old man accepted the report and flipped through it. Gradually, the smile on his face stiffened and vanished. He sighed.
Everything needs money. The five-year plan needs money. The army needs money. The strategic nuclear weapons program and the satellite program need money. And even the revolutionary operas by that woman need money. Even so, we must find money for this program too. How about this? Can we delay the construction of these power plants?
He pointed to a few lines at the end of the budget summary. Zhou Enlai frowned.
Our industrialization program is in desperate need of electricity, Chairman. We should have built these power plants yesterday. All right, let me look through this again.
The tall old man sighed and flipped through the budget report again, trying to find anything that could be slashed. Everything was urgent. Zhou Enlai looked at him with sympathy.
I understand that you think the search for aliens is important. We'll make do without the power plants. I'm sure China can survive another few years without them. After your discussion with Guo and Tian, I'll ask the State Council to redo the budget.
The tall old man didn't nod. He kept his head lowered and thought over the matter. In the end, he made up his mind and swept his hand through the air.
Forget it. We have no idea if there even are aliens in the universe, but we must carry on with the practical task of industrializing China. Let's put off the idea for building an extraterrestrial search facility for now. But the power plants must be built well.
His finger landed heavily against the last line of the report. Niang Ziguan Power Plant. 1969. Xinjiang Production and Construction Corps, Xinjiang, China. At the foot of the Tian Shan Mountains, the endless grasslands spread to the horizon. There was a tiny open yard next to the wall behind the row of simple, hastily constructed shacks. In the middle of the yard was a small water basin filled with clear water. A young woman dressed in a green military uniform stood next to the basin and carefully dropped some ink from a bottle into the basin. Soon the clear water turned black. The sun, reflected in the dark water, was a pale glowing ghost.
"This is just like the dark times we live in," muttered Ye Wenjie.
She was thinking of her father, who had died 2 years ago, the victim of a violent struggle session. She knew she didn't have the time to indulge her emotions, and she pushed the memory away to focus on the reflection of the sun. Someone slapped her on the shoulder. Wenjie almost jumped out of her skin. She turned around and saw a teenaged girl standing behind her.
"Wenxue, you terrified me. Why did you sneak up behind me? They're looking for you at the core. Why aren't you working like you're supposed to?"
"Shh."
Wenjie pulled her little sister aside.
"Don't tell the others, but I'm doing astronomy. What are you looking at?"
Wenjie lowered her voice.
"Sunspots." "What? You are looking at dark spots against the glowing sun?"
Wen Xue's voice grew shrill with fear.
"People who want to get you into trouble will say that you're attacking our great leader symbolically in the name of science. That's why I'm hiding here to do it in secret. It's not the predicted time for increased sunspot activity yet. But recently, I've been observing a lot of spots and unusual solar activity."
"Would you give it a rest?"
said Wen Xue.
"Do you think you're still a graduate student in astrophysics? You're in the remotest corner of China, where you don't even have access to basic equipment. What science can you do with a basin of dirty water? Anyway, even if you did make some discovery, what good would it do? We live in a time where the more science you know, the more reactionary you are judged to be. Our father's fate should serve as a warning. Stop getting into trouble."
Wen Xue kicked the basin and flipped it, spilling inky water all over the ground.
"Why did you do that?"
Wenjie glared at Wen Xue. Seeing that her big sister really was angry, Wen Xue ran away. Ye Wenjie stared at the spreading black stain on the ground, as though she were seeing a sunspot that had landed on the ground, gradually expanding, threatening to swallow up the whole earth. Sighing, Wenjie lifted her gaze into the sky.
"Who is going to redeem this dark and soiled land?"
1979. Lang Son, Vietnam. A brown ant crawled through the soil noiselessly. The sounds of cannon shots and gunfire came faintly from far away. Flashes from fiery explosions lit up the horizon. But here, in this dark forest, silence still reigned. The war between China and Vietnam was as far away as another universe. Even the powerful light of distant flares could not penetrate the thick vegetation. For the brown ant, the war really was happening in another universe. The entirety of the ant's world consisted of a circle no more than 100 meters across, a tiny corner of this forest. Anything outside of this circle was incomprehensible. If one were to anthropomorphize the ant could be said to be very happy. The night patrol had yielded a fresh honeybee carcass, enough to feed the colony for 2 days. It was now hurrying back to the colony to bring the good news to its sisters so that all could enjoy this rich meal. In reality, of course, the ant had no human emotions at all. It was simply moving along at a brisk pace, propelled by the instinct for survival. Suddenly, a gigantic object unimaginable by the ant fell down, blotting out the sky and everything around the ant. The ant didn't feel much pressure. It had been positioned right in a crack in the surface of the object and wasn't harmed. The ant proceeded tentatively, its antennae soon detecting a strange surface in front. Without thinking, it climbed onto the surface. The surface began to move, carrying the brown ant with it. The surface stopped for a few moments before flying through the air at a dizzying speed again. Stop, move, stop, move. Even the dim-witted brown ant now realized that the surface it was on wasn't normal. Clusters of neurons sent out the signals for danger. Panicked, it crawled all around the strange surface, hoping to find a way to escape back to its regular plane of existence, the familiar Earth. A whisper broke through the night.
Dasher, do you really think we're going to find the enemy ahead of us?
The voice came from some entity to the side, a small distance away.
Shut up!
This voice came from directly above the ant. Perhaps the surface it was on was a part of the entity that possessed this voice.
It's so dark here. I can't imagine how...
A sharp gunshot answered his question by silencing him abruptly. The entity to the side of where the ant was fell to the ground.
Fuck!
The entity called Dasher cursed and shot his gun into the darkness. Someone tossed a flare into the air, and everything was bathed in a blinding pale light. Amid bursts of explosion, dozens of bodies emerged from the darkness, divided into two opposing sides. Gunshots filled the formerly quiet forest, turning it into a bullet-riddled, smoke-filled hellscape. A Chinese squad had run into a Vietnamese squad, and the only choice for each side was to kill the other. After an intense few seconds, the sounds of gunshots gradually grew sparse. The enemy's fire had been suppressed, and the 7 or 8 remaining soldiers pressed forward step by step until they surrounded a thick clump of shrubs. They could hear the noise of someone concealed inside.
No song. Lieutenant, what were we supposed to say to get the Vietnamese to surrender?
Asked Dasher. Nop song hong zet da dai.
Right, that's it. No song kong jet ra dai.
After a few more repetitions, the soldiers swept the shrubs with flashlights. Finally, an answering voice indicated that they were going to surrender, and 4 hands were raised above the bush. 2 bodies finally emerged from the vegetation. Oddly, the bodies were pale white. The soldiers stared at the 2 nude young women standing before them. A moment later, one of the soldiers dropped his flashlight. All of them were too stunned to speak or move. Except Dasher. Suddenly, he picked up his assault rifle and swept the clump of bushes with a few rapid bursts of fire. Dying cries filled the silence after the deafening shots. The other soldiers finally understood what was happening. While the 2 women had emerged to draw the soldiers' attention, other enemy soldiers had been preparing to slaughter them. But their plot had been foiled by the vigilant Dasher. Cold-blooded Dasher had swept his stream of bullets across the women as well. Now they lay on the ground, groaning. Blood seeped from their wounds, pooling around them. Dasher went around the clump of bushes to be sure that he had eliminated all threats. The rest of the soldiers clustered around the 2 wounded women, unsure what to do. In the end, they decided to bring them back as prisoners of war. Suddenly, one of the women convulsed and died. The other also stopped moving. One of the young soldiers bent down to examine her. The woman exploded into motion, sweeping her leg at the ankles of the young soldier. Unprepared for the assault, the soldier fell down on her. Before he could recover, the woman had seized the Type 56 rifle from his hands and shot him in the face. Still on the ground, the woman swept the Chinese soldiers with multiple bursts from the rifle. Several soldiers fell dead where they stood. The woman got up, energized by the excitement of exacting bloody vengeance. She had been wounded only slightly, and the blood on her body was mostly from her companion. She surveyed the scene of carnage proudly. But soon she sensed danger. There was someone she had missed. Dasher jumped on her from behind. The woman tried to throw him off, but he grabbed on tight, and the 2 fell to the ground together as they fought for control of the rifle. Twisting, turning, kicking, rolling. This was a life-or-death struggle for both. A crisp shot rang out. Dasher's body trembled. and a look of disbelief came over his face. He was on top of the woman, and warm blood was flowing out of his belly to pool on the ground beneath both of them. The overjoyed woman tried to push him off her, but he was too heavy. Da Shi, eyes still open, grimaced and pulled out a dagger. Slowly, carefully, he aimed the dagger at the throat of the woman under him. The terrified woman pushed even harder, but she was unable to get the necessary leverage against his weight. She squeezed the trigger twice more, and now Da Shi's lower body was a bloody mess. She could feel Da Shi's warm intestines dripping out of his body cavity to coil over her body. Still, Da Shi refused to die. His hand trembled violently, barely holding on to the dagger. With a final animalistic growl, he plunged the dagger into the woman's throat. Blood spurted from the pumping arteries and drenched Da Shi's face. The woman stared at Da Shi, as though she wanted to speak. No noise emerged. After a few seconds, her head fell to the side. She was dead. Da Shi could not get up. In this universe deprived of 5 kilograms of matter, his life had come to an end. He would never marry or have a child. He would never pursue criminals in one of the world's greatest metropolises. He would never grab the cigar from Colonel Stanton and come up with the plan for Operation Guzheng. He would never accompany Luo Ji on that fateful flight to the United Nations. He would certainly not go into hibernation for more than 200 years and become the first person to hear Luo Ji explain the grandest mystery of the universe. For some reason, Da Shi felt a sense of lightness, as though a great burden had been lifted off his shoulders.
Dying on top of a naked woman isn't the worst way to go,
thought Da Shi as his consciousness faded. Slowly, he closed his eyes and stopped moving. Silence returned to the forest. The brown ant sensed the change in the entity it was on. Finally, it managed to climb off the strange entity, though it lingered around the area, hesitating. Finally, after many exploratory trips over the strange entity and another entity beneath it, the ant came to an astonishing conclusion. The conclusion gave it an excitement originating from the deepest part of the will to life. The ant didn't know what these entities were or what they had been trying to do, but it knew one thing beyond a shadow of a doubt. These gigantic creatures are going to make excellent meals for me and my sisters. 1983. Purple Bamboo Park, Beijing, China. The bamboo grove swayed in the dusk. The lake in late autumn was a deep indigo. As the first stars appeared in the crystalline empyrean, a silver dot also appeared among them. But its quick movement and growing size indicated that it was no star. Hovering about 100 meters above ground, it seemed to be searching for something as it gradually descended. In the almost deserted park, no one noticed the arrival of this mysterious visitor. From a cave nestled in a nearby rock formation, 2 panting voices emerged.
Xiu Xiu, you're the prettiest girl in the world. I can't stand it. Please, just once.
Be careful. Oh, that's good. Right there.
Hurried steps approached the rock formation. The lovers tried to stop and hide, but it was too late. Several police officers stormed into the cave and pinned them with their flashlight beams. Before the young man could speak, the policeman had dragged him off the woman and thrown him down to the ground. The young woman covered her face and sobbed. 5 minutes later, in the park police station.
Your name?
The sound of sobbing.
That's enough crying. Answer the question.
Cheng Xiuxiu.
This was followed by more sobs.
And you?
Zhang Yuanqiao.
What is your relationship?
We are together.
Together? The park was closed. So what were you two doing holed up in that cave?
That's not any of your business, said Zhang Yuan Chao.
Oh, not any of our business? Let me tell you something. There's a campaign for striking hard right now. Do you understand? You young people, corrupted by Western capitalist ideas, are the targets of the campaign to maintain spiritual purity. Last month, there was a young man just about your age who tried to cop a feel of a female comrade on the bus. Do you know what happened to him? He was convicted of sexual misbehavior and sentenced to death by firing squad.
Comrade, please. I didn't mean to speak so disrespectfully. Zhang Yuan Chao's tone was now pleading. We really are together. We even have our wedding date set. But neither of us has our own place, so we had to... You were our age once too, right? Do you smoke?
He pulled out a pack of Da Tianmen cigarettes and held it out to the police officer, grinning ingratiatingly.
Don't you dare think that you can bribe the people's police with a single pack of cigarettes. I'm telling you right now, there's no room for negotiation.
But Zhang Yuan Chao pushed the cigarettes into the officer's hand, and a 10 yuan bill was concealed under the pack. The officer wrapped his fingers around the pack and the bill, and his face seemed to soften. But before he could speak, a middle-aged officer walked in.
What's the deal with these two?
Station chief!
The officer pocketed the cigarettes and the money before standing up.
We found these two in the cave while they were... Since they are about to be married, I'm thinking we should just find them and let them go. What do you think?
You caught them in the cave?
The station chief was excited.
Perfect! The bureau chief just called, concerned that we haven't met our target quota for the Strike Hard campaign. Send them over.
Wait, wait! We're about to be married! Why are you striking hard against us?
Zhang Yuan Chao was now really scared and got up from his seat.
That's not fair!
A policeman approached to restrain him, and he shoved the officer.
Look at this! Not only is this man a sexual deviant, he just assaulted a police officer!
The station chief declared triumphantly.
Arrest them immediately and bring them to the bureau!
As Zhang Yuan Chao protested and Cheng Xiuxiu sobbed, officers dragged the couple away. But just as they were about to be brought out of the station, another policeman came in with a baby in his arms.
Chief, look! We found an abandoned baby next to the park bench by the bridge. There was also a bottle of milk and 1,000 yuan.
Everyone turned their attention to the baby. Even the officers holding the couple stopped. Cheng Xiuxiu, eyes filled with tears, looked at the tiny baby.
Did you two abandon this baby?
The station chief asked Zhang Yuan Chao.
No! No!
Blood drained from Yuan Chao's face.
We haven't even... You know, how can we have a baby? And if we had been here to abandon a baby, how could we possibly have been in the mood to go into the cave?
Did you see who did it?
Both Zhang Yuan Chao and Cheng Xiuxiu shook their heads. The station chief lost interest in the pair. He looked at the baby and pinched the baby's fat cheeks.
What a lovely baby! And so much money left with it. That's my salary for a whole year. What foolish woman and man did this? What a corrupt world we live in now. Everything is chaos. Young men and women are sleeping together without being married, and even giving birth to babies. Not only do we have to strike hard, we have to strike harder.
All the policemen vied with each other to express their approval of the station chief's speech with the most zeal.
Don't just stand there. Bring them to the bureau. They're waiting to make quota,
the station chief said to the officers holding the lovers.
As for this baby, Xiao Li, why don't you take care of it?
As the officers brought Cheng Xiuxiu away, she glanced back at the baby. Although she was terrified by what was about to happen to her, she still felt a maternal instinct toward the helpless child. Of course, there was nothing she could do. The baby had nothing to do with her, and would never have anything to do with her. As the station chief was walking away, he suddenly turned around.
Is the baby a boy or a girl?
Look how cute she is. She's definitely a little girl, said the officer holding the baby. Going to be a heartbreaker someday.
But another officer, who was dedicated to evidence-based investigatory methods, spread the baby's legs and looked in carefully.
A little boy, Chief.
As if to provide even more confirmation for the officer's pronouncement, the baby's tiny organ moved, and a golden stream of urine shot right into the policeman's face.
Oh, come on, damn it!
Outside the window, the silver glowing object quietly departed. Inside the object, a miniature computer came to a conclusion. In this new universe that was missing 5 kilograms, the woman who had created the silver object no longer existed. No, it was more accurate to say that she had never existed and would never exist. But the object still had to accomplish its mission. In this new universe, it had to find the right person to pass a message from the last universe on to. It had floated in this universe for billions of years for the sole purpose of carrying out a mission that was older than the universe itself. A mission given to it by a woman who didn't exist. The Tri-Solaris system was nothing like the version from the last universe. The 3 stars were arranged in a stable arrangement, and in place of the Tri-Solarans and their harsh ecosystem, there was a different species of low-entropy entities. The solar system and the Earth were here, at first glance the same as in the last universe. But it was clear that, compared with the detailed records stored inside the bottle, many, many details had changed. Some people had never been born, and others had died long ago. Even those who still existed were living completely different lives. The bottle didn't care. It had to carry out its mission. Without hesitation, the stored instructions pointed to a final target. Yun Tianming. Autumn 2003. Yun Tianming's home. At precisely 7 o'clock, the logo for the nightly news appeared on the TV screen to the accompaniment of familiar strains of music. Tianming sat forward on the sofa, anxiously staring at the screen. The anchorman and anchorwoman, both well known to the whole nation, smiled and announced the day's most important news items. The campaign to maintain the advanced nature of Communist Party members was progressing well and accomplishing multiple objectives. Shenzhou 5 successfully brought the first taikonaut in the world into space. A suicide bombing attack in Iraq caused multiple American casualties. Tianming flipped through a few more stations. Some were showing the news broadcast, others were showing cartoons and dramas. Everything was normal. Tianming let out a long sigh and leaned back against the couch, lighting up a cigarette.
That war isn't going to happen, he thought.
By that war, Tianming had in mind the horrifying war that had occurred in the last universe in the South China Sea. In that war, the pride of the Chinese Navy, the aircraft carrier Everest, was easily destroyed by an American meteorological weapon. China was about to be crushed by the United States when an accidental macroatomic fusion forced the enemy back, leading to a peace treaty that preserved the nation. Since the crisis era had commenced not long after the end of that war, the Sino-American contest in the South China Sea had been largely forgotten by history. But for the Chinese, who had enjoyed decades of peace, the war with the Americans was an important turning point. From then on, the course of world history had twisted in an unanticipated direction. Now that war didn't and wasn't going to happen. That meant that the Tri-Solaran crisis likely also would never come. To be sure, Yun Tianming understood that this universe had already diverged greatly from the last one. There was no Red Coast base, and Ye Wenjie didn't use it to send a message to the non-existent Tri-Solarans. According to his investigation, Ye Wenjie had emigrated to the United States more than 10 years ago. Maybe she would still bump into Mike Evans over there, but the two of them weren't going to be able to cause much destruction by themselves. Then again, although he had the bottle's report, he had never seen the Tri-Solaran system with his own eyes. He could not be sure that those terrifying Trisolarans hadn't evolved somewhere else in that system, or in a different system, or that right now they weren't on board a massive fleet headed straight for the Earth. Who knew if any of the subsequent events might still happen? Ever since the bottle got in touch with him, it seemed anything was possible. For example, although his name, age, and family background had all changed, the bottle told him in no uncertain terms that he was the Yun Tianming stored in its records. The matter that formed the zygote that grew to be him was the same matter that had once formed the zygote for Yun Tianming. He and Yun Tianming were the same person across two universes. The utterly preposterous fact was nonetheless a fact. Still, it seemed that in this universe, on this Earth, the Crisis Era would not be a reality. He never did believe that the world would end up in the Crisis Era, but after learning so much about the last universe from the bottle, and since that universe and Earth were so similar to his universe and his Earth, he often saw double vision as the two universes overlapped in his mind.
Didn't I tell you that you don't need to worry? History has changed, and that war cannot happen.
A sweet voice spoke behind him. Tianming turned around and saw a gorgeous woman smiling at him flirtatiously.
What are you doing here? Go back now! What if my wife sees you?
Tianming was on the verge of panic.
Don't worry. The missus is out shopping, which gives us plenty of time to...
Would you stop with the jokes? If anyone saw you here, how would I ever explain it? They'd think I have Ran Asakawa in my house.
The woman giggled.
You really are the same as your predecessor from the last universe.
Yun Tianming sighed. In this universe, there's no Cheng Xin and no Ai Xiaowei. Helena became Mehmed II's favorite consort and died 500 years ago. Guan Yifan isn't even born yet, and I have no memories of that universe except what I've been told. But Sofan, you're still here, causing trouble.
You'll have to thank your beloved from the last universe for that. She was so full of love for everything and everyone, and insisted that my data be recorded in the bottle.
Sofan winked at him. I know very well why you manipulated her into replicating you, said Tianming dryly. It was part of the Master's plan. It wanted you to persist into the next universe so you could continue to serve it.
That's correct. Too bad the Master is no longer the Master of the past. Although the war between the Lurker and the Master happened again, I couldn't get in touch with it. After dimension reversal, the Master was reborn, but it was without any memories of the last universe, and didn't even know I existed. I couldn't go to its mini-universe, so that's why I came to find you, darling Tianming. You're like a big brother to me.
Big brother? Are you kidding me? You're at least 20 billion years older than I am. Also, didn't you used to act like my loyal servant?
Oh-ho! I had no idea you have a maid fetish. Do you want me to put on a sexy apron? I was going to obey your orders, but darling Tianming, of the core matter that you inherited, about 3% came from other places. And since you don't have any memories from that universe, I can't really say you're exactly the same as Yun Tianming. That is why I don't need to obey you anymore. Just like you managed to shake off the Master's mental seal all those years ago, I can be released from my charge to obey.
So why have you stayed with me all these years?
I still haven't finished my mission. I have to tell this universe what happened in the last one.
Then you should head for the United Nations, or go to Washington, D.C. Go to Beijing, at least. Lots of people would want to talk to you. Why are you holed up here in this remote city next to a power plant?
But the mission from your beloved from the last universe requires me to pass on those memories without affecting the natural development of civilization in this universe. How am I supposed to do that? Unless I wait until the end of the universe, anything I say will affect the course of history.
Then what are you planning to do?
I have no idea. All I can do for now is to wait. Now, my original plan was to change your body to be incorruptible and help you go find the lurker in this universe. But I don't have enough energy, and even the Earth doesn't have enough energy for me to use. Even if I hoarded every drop of energy and waited until the day you died, I still wouldn't save up even 1% of what I need. But that's all right. I'll just preserve your data. A few tens of thousands of years later, I can recreate you to serve the Master's grand plan again.
Sofon managed to keep a straight face throughout the whole lecture. Yun Tianming was speechless. A few years ago, when Sofon first appeared with the bottle, he had thought of her as an angel, a beautiful woman whom no one else could see and who only spoke to him. But soon he realized that this woman was the devil. And indeed, compared with her, all devils could be described as angels. Since the master isn't even the same master from before, why are you even serving it? Tianming finally found an opening.
Because the chain of cause and effect isn't complete yet.
What are you talking about?
The chain of cause and effect linking each universe to its predecessor and successor. Because the last universe lost 5 kilograms before dimension reversal, it resulted in this universe, right? So the question is, what will happen if we trace out the evolution of this universe?
Tianming gasped. What a frightening thought.
Think about it, darling Tianming. This isn't just a war fought over a single universe. As long as time exists, there will be a war between the lurker and the master. We will face the exact same problem as the last universe. Should we let the universe be destroyed in the nothingness that is zero dimensions? Should we recycle all matter to let the exact same film play again? Or should we lose another 5 kilograms and strive for a new possibility?
I would choose the latter.
But there will be an end to that route. The universe cannot increase its mass, and it cannot lose matter without end. Even if you choose to lose only a single atom with each iteration, there will be a day when there's nothing more to lose. And long before that, you won't have enough for life and intelligence. In the end, only 2 possibilities remain for the ultimate fate of the universe: nothingness and the eternal recurrence.
That is depressing.
The master and the lurker cannot change, so for them, there is no way out. But you really do have the choice of creating a new possibility.
Oh? Tell me, how can we escape from this trap?
Sofon smiled. We'll send only a brain.
We'll send only... Wait, that's what Wade said. Tianming was baffled. But then he sat there with his mouth open, utterly stunned by a new idea.
Do you understand now?
Asked Sofon. Are you really...
Yep. This is the ultimate mission the Master gave me when the last universe ended. In the next universe, I must strive to send a thinking being to another universe on the supermembrane so that they can discover a new path for all life in this universe. You're the perfect choice to be the explorer.
Tianming had no response to that.
This is why it's best to think of everything that has happened in these 2 universes as a mere overture. Tianming, your true legend has yet to begin. You are not fated to remain on Earth, and you are not meant to stop at Planet Blue, at the last universe, or even at this universe. You're meant to visit other universes, other space-times, and even the supermembrane that includes all universes. That is your true mission.
Sometime later, a frowning Yun Tianming clicked through the channels on his TV until he stopped at some random provincial news broadcast. A familiar face appeared on the screen.
A young sociologist. The plagiarism scandal has refused to go away. He has told our reporter that the scandal is the result of a misunderstanding. We are now going to interview some prominent scholars for their take on this scandal.
Who would have expected this from Luo Ji? Tianming sighed. He had never met Luo Ji, whether in the last universe or this one. But after he learned what Luo Ji had done in the last universe, he had admired him greatly. In this universe, although Luo Ji had a different name, his life so far hewed pretty closely to the earlier half of his predecessor's career. A rather dissolute college instructor. But this time around, it seemed unlikely that Luo Ji would experience the events that would turn his life around. Zhuang Yan's life was also completely different. She was now a famous actress with the surname Liu, beloved by thousands and always showing up on red carpets. It seemed impossible that her path and Luo Ji's would ever cross.
Sofan, can we talk? Tianming tried to keep his tone breezy and pleasant. This mission that you mentioned, I really think you're better off approaching Luo Ji with it. You know him really well, and I think he'd be perfect.
Oh, I do know him very well. Long before I was given this body, I spent a lot of time observing him, and all that time during the Deterrence Era. But he can't compare with you. No matter what, you're the first man in my life. Very special for a woman, right? And so it's natural for me to come to you.
What? When did I become your man? And what do you mean, the first?
Have you forgotten that my body is constructed from the image in your head? You're the one who made me a woman. So of course you're my first man.
Sofan chuckled. Once again, Tianming found himself with no adequate retort. He continued to watch the news. On TV, Luo Ji was arguing with the person who had accused him of plagiarism. Tianming thought that Luo Ji's new life was not necessarily a bad thing. To live an ordinary life filled with ordinary problems was better than shouldering a burden heavier than anyone should bear for more than a century, wasn't it?
What about Zhang Beihai? He's still there, just under a different name. I think he's just as qualified as Luo Ji for your purposes. I think he's the commanding officer for the fleet on the Somalia mission, right?
I have zero interest in adherents of escapism, said Sofan, still grinning. Also, I don't think cold-blooded Zhang Beihai is going to be very nice to me. The first thing he might do is to tie me up and hand me over to the party to be dissected for research. No, no, no. You're stuck with me, darling Tianming. Also, you have a different brain from everyone else. In the last universe, you managed to invent Green Tempest as a college student. That means you are blessed with extraordinary imagination. I'm sure anyone else wouldn't have lasted nearly as long as you did in the hands of the Trisolarans. Believe me, you're a genius. The real deal. Your accomplishments in this universe just provide even more proof.
Genius? You should go talk to Ding Yi then. Oh, what's his name now? Lee something. Anyway, he's brilliant, and rumor has it that he's just as much a ladies' man as he was in the last universe. I'm sure he would love to get to know you.
I'm not interested in geniuses like Ding Yi. You could put 10 Ding Yis together in a room, and they still wouldn't be able to see through the lurker's trap. But you would. Sure, you don't have his aptitude for theoretical physics, but you have creativity and imagination. What you need is a bit of development to exploit.
Forget it, Tianming shook his head. I was exploited and developed more than enough by the Trisolarans and your master in my last life. I'm going to live an ordinary life this time around. I have no wish to wander the supermembrane for billions of years.
An ordinary life? Ha! The whole country now knows who you are. Fine. I won't mention the supermembrane for now, since that's a plan for the far future anyway. But I have to say, it's not easy for all the matter that made up the last you to be reassembled into the new you. I think you owe the last universe at least one simple task.
What are you?
Sofon's face grew solemn.
Write it all down, Tianming. I want you to write it all down and tell everyone what happened in the last universe. In the future, there will come a day when humanity will discover the truth within, and that is how I'll complete the mission Cheng Xin assigned me. After all, writing is your forte.
Write it all down. How?
You're a writer, aren't you?
But I write science fiction.
Well, you can call it something like a past outside of time, but people will read it like science fiction. Someday, when they discover the true mysteries of the universe, they'll understand what you really meant.
Tianming realized this wasn't a half-bad idea. Everything he had learned from Sofon would make a pretty good story. It had everything. Love and rage, humanity's arrogance, duty of the individual, the fate of the universe. Maybe everyone would benefit from such a novel. Tianming made up his mind. Fine, I'll do it. At least it's easier than exploring the super membrane.
All right, I'm holding you to your promise. My darling Tianming, or should I call you by your present name, Zexin? You have to write this story down, and you can always come to me if you want clarification on some details.
Still grinning, Sofon vanished into thin air. She was, after all, just a holographic projection. Yun Tianming felt the urge to write. Inspiration came at him in waves. First the title, and then the outline filled his mind. He took a deep breath, sat down at his desk, turned on the computer, and started a new file. At the top of the blank page, he typed, "Remembrance of Earth's Past." And then, after a brief pause, he typed in a smaller font on the next line. Book 1. The Three-Body Problem. This is PJ Oakland. We hope you have enjoyed The Redemption of Time, a Three-Body Problem novel, by Bao Shu. Translated by Ken Liu. A Macmillan Audio production. This title was produced by Lepton Productions. Executive Producer Robert Van Kolken. Text copyright 2011 by Bao Shu. English translation copyright 2016 by China Educational Publications Import and Export Corp. Limited. Production copyright 2019 by Macmillan Audio. All rights reserved.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.